Phew.
Well, we've done Business Jazz, Roger Overall. We have actually recorded our podcast. I've lost track of how many there are in the series. If you count all the alpha versions and the beta versions, I don't know if this is gamma or delta version, but we always, in the last couple of times, we've actually had a little chat about how it went. So, you started off in kind of grumpy humour today. How do you feel after that conversation?
I do. Well, it's lifted me out of the world that has caused me to be grumpy for about 45 minutes.
So you're about to go back and be grumpy, are you?
Well, no.
Lifted you out for 45 minutes.
It did, and then the net effect of that is, I hope, it will have lifted me out of it permanently for the rest of the day. Principally, we had a great conversation. We've produced another program, and that's always to be celebrated when another piece of content gets finished, so I'm quite excited about that.
I had a feeling we got a bit bogged down. I had this kind of agitation about within myself, trying to imagine what people who were listening to it would make of it. I thought to myself, are they getting... You know, the people who want to get loads and loads of specific information about what exactly did Chris Brogan say, and who don't actually want to have the trouble of getting his email for themselves and reading it for themselves and rely upon us to summarize it for them, I think, well, they're getting shortchanged. Now, that doesn't mean I don't think they should get shortchanged. Maybe they should get shortchanged. But basically...
Here comes my humour in a minute.
at a certain point, forgive me if I came across in the conversation as having a slightly agitated edge to me, because I did have.
Did it come across? No, I don't think so at all. I mean, just to come back to your point, quite honestly, we are not here to do an audio version of Chris's email.
Yeah, he could do that himself, couldn't he?
He could do it himself. Not only that,
doesn't he produce an audio version of his own email?
I don't know. And of course, if he did, that would be very interesting. We might lose some listeners. But the point I'm trying to make here is
we gain some listeners.
That's true as well. I suppose we gain really.
You know?
But the long and short of it is Chris's email is his intellectual property. They're his thoughts. They're his ideas. The last thing we should be doing is just verbatim explaining what Chris has said. Reading out what Chris has said in his email. We touch upon enough information and give it our own slant to make what we're doing different and useful, I think. And if listeners can't be bothered to go to chrisbrogan.com and sign up for his newsletter, then this is a man talking who was up until 1:30 with a plumbing issue.
You are grumpy, you know that. And if people, let's put it another way, if people make the discriminating judgment that the time is not yet right in their life for them to go to Human Business Works and Chris Brogan, that is their prerogative. You know, it may be, who are we to prescribe for anybody, Roger? If there's only, the only thing that matters as far as I'm concerned is both you and I actually are unequivocally valuing of this American in Boston, Chris Brogan, who hasn't yet come to Ireland.
I like the phrase yet.
Well, as far as I know, he hasn't yet come to Ireland. He has been to the UK several times, and he went to Torquay once, I think, and I got very jealous when he went to Torquay and mixed with a load of people in a thing called Like Minds, which was wonderful. Did I ever tell you the story about that?
You didn't, but let's finish the point you're trying to make about Chris first.
I can't even remember the point I was trying to make.
Well, if people...
What point was I trying to make?
That people should be allowed to choose for themselves whether they sign up for Chris's newsletter or not. I would just say that you get immensely more value from Chris's email than listening to us ribbiting on about it. And the combination of the two, thank you very much. Is going to be more valuable to you. So please, go and sign up for Chris's emails. Yeah, that's what I want to say. Now, tell me your story.
Well, no, it was more about Chris Brogan than coming to Ireland. Once upon a time, I heard Chris Brogan was on a plane going to London, right? And I thought, first of all, I'd been to a place called London, Ontario, right? It's in Canada, right? So my first thought was, oh, he's going to London. And then I realised that he was stuck on an aeroplane flying across the Atlantic. And I think the first time I realized that you could actually do Twitter from a transatlantic airliner. Did you know that? Certainly you can do it while crossing the United States. And there's no... Anyway, that's another story. But then again, I thought, right, okay, he's going to arrive in London, he's going to go to the Barbican, or he's going to go to one of the big conference centres in London, he's going to be speaking there, right? Then I discovered that he was going to, of all places, Torquay. Now, you know, you're an educated man, you've travelled the world, do you know where Torquay is?
It's on the south coast.
Yeah, you
coast?
See,
it's
exactly.
South,
that's my point is made. Yeah, it's somewhere
towers.
Down there.
Faulty towers.
But it's where people, you know, terrible, terrible stereotype of Torquay is where people go to retire, right?
Yes.
It's a retirement home on the south coast of England, right? And it's out of the way. In fact, there's a lot more to Torquay than that, but the point is it has that kind of image. And I thought, what the devil is Chris Brogan going to do? He's going to land into Heathrow Airport and have to get to Torquay. Well, it's a bugger of a journey.
Yep.
Actually, but there he was traveling to this relatively obscure place, right? And then he spent the whole of the first day that he arrived there with a whole load of people who are, you know, no richer than you and I. In other words, they were not the great and the good. They were a whole load of passionate people involved in communications. And I don't know how they ever got there, but they were under the title Like Minds. In other words, they didn't have to pay huge amounts of money to get into the room and spend time with them for the day. Then I discovered how this was all being made possible, because the second day was Chris with some corporates, spending a day with very serious businesses, influencing presumably their communication strategy or their cultural or their community building strategy in some way. Right? But he was really, so the thing is, going to sit in a room with enthusiastic people who had, you know, serious causes in their mind rather than just making money, because a lot of these people were from local government as well. So they weren't the great and the good, they were just people trying to help communities to be administered and to be run and to have policies. And he was there in the middle of them chatting away. I followed the whole thing via Twitter, mind you. I wasn't there. But I was completely and utterly captivated by the idea of this man who I, you know, thought of as a great, great business guru traveling to an obscure place.
Well, I think he travels to obscure places every week.
I wouldn't call Seattle and Vancouver and New York obscure.
That's not what I mean. He travels to people's inboxes, email inboxes all around the world. His reach on a weekly basis.
Oh, I give you that one. I got to chalk that up on the board there. I'm just raising one finger to rub an oil painting here. Okay,
no,
I walked
but,
it. That
but,
was splendid.
No.
Like
but I think
that's your best move this morning. You know that.
That's my best move this morning.
I thought that was good. Never underestimate Roger Overall, right? Never underestimate him.
I'm not trying to be one up on it. It's not one upmanship. It's just that I can see how it would fit with the philosophy of a man who wants to connect with people, and it doesn't really bother him where they are. Yes, it's glamorous to go to Seattle, I'm sure. I've never been, but it strikes me as a pleasant place.
Yes, the home of fish.
The home of fish.
I must tell you about fish someday. I mean, at a concrete level, Seattle has obviously hasn't reached Glanmire, because Glanmire has a fish shop, but a terribly famous fish market, right? I imagine it to be huge, right? Mm-hmm. One of the things is that somebody in the front of the fish stall, imagine a massive fish stall, right? Somebody down there interacting with a customer, right? Does a deal with you about what fish you want, and they literally lift the fish and chuck it up in the air over their back to people at the back who catch it, work on it, descale it, defin it, de-blumpity-blump it, make it into nice fillets, wrap it all up and throw it back out to you wrapped, and you're passing it back to the customer. This is theatre of the
say,
most
that's,
dramatic
that
stuff.
Sounds amazing.
Steve Luton and his associates, and the only guy I got in touch with via email was Steve Luton. This is going back many, many years, to about the year 2000 anyway. There's a book called Fish. There's about three books called Fish, and it is a stunning book on customer service. Mm. Absolutely on customer service. Fish in Seattle. Somebody came onto Twitter with me yesterday from Seattle, and I said back to them, wow, the home of fish.
and they also, that's where they met Chris Brogan, funnily enough, in Seattle. If I could remember her name, I'd drop it into the conversation.
So yeah,
Seattle is worth going to. It is about, I imagine, about 100 times bigger as a fish experience than the covered market in Cork called the English Market, where Kay O'Connell's fish stall is run by the guy who they was made the iconic photograph with Queen Elizabeth.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's interesting you say that, because it's the iconic photograph of the visit of the Queen of England to Ireland here where we are. In Dublin, the iconic photograph...
It's the Garden of Remembrance, isn't
and,
it?
And of a, yes, and of a very sombre, almost anxious visit. And our memories of the visit here, outside of Dublin, are of a warm, buoyant, happy, welcoming... It was a fantastic experience. And it's just interesting...
She smiled. She smiled in public, the Queen. A big, big smile in front of the fish guy in the English Market.
And the public smiled back. And that's... So it's interesting that a photograph that is seen as iconic is iconic here, because that was our experience of the visit. But we're in Dublin, and I've had conversations with people, photographers, about this. And for them... It was a different visit altogether.
It was a journey. Look, let's talk about it from the point of view of a journey, right? Mm. The Queen went on a journey which began in a state of in which some kind of rapport with the Irish people had to be made and was made in the most stunning way. Mm. I mean, she went and stood with bowed head in the Garden of Remembrance in Ireland, where were buried the people who had bombed her people, including her family, or people in that culture or in that tradition. And the whole of Irish people watched every flicker in her eyelids, right? Now, she did that, and whoever choreographed the whole trip, I have to commend them. It was brilliant, because she went down then through the country, and by the time she got to Cork, she wasn't the only person smiling. The people of Ireland were actually smiling.
Oh, it was a celebration.
And it wasn't just, oh, Cork is a smiley, smiley face, Dublin is a very serious place. It was a journey through Ireland, and it involved calling into horses on the way. I think she went to the horses at Coolmore, at Stud.
No, she did go to Stud, that I know.
On the way, and everybody knows how important the Queen... I was nearly saying how important the Queen is to horses, how important the horses are to Queen. The Queen, actually, both are probably true.
But it was a remarkable journey, and it was encapsulated, I think, in you could say then in two photographs.
Did any Irish photographer do a series of documentary photographs tracking the Queen from beginning, the time she arrived till the time she left? Did anybody take that on?
Not that I'm aware of.
Bloody stupid idiots. Excuse my language.
It would have been great.
Why on earth aren't there photographers who appreciate documentary work for the sake of history? I mean, for one photographer, and this is, I mean, she was photographed the whole way, right? But that is a totally different experience than the story being told by one coherent eye of one photographer who has actually taken on the job of telling the story, you know, imaginatively, using all the skills that you use in your own work as a documentary photographer. I'm going to be grumpy now. Why aren't there others doing documentary work in Ireland who would do that? I mean, why do they let that pass?
It's a very good question. It could have been an issue of access. Don't forget, it was a very, very tightly controlled
position. Ah, feck that. I believe that if somebody was really serious about it, right, really serious, I mean, I know, yeah, you'd have to do the hard work to win access, right? But frankly, you know, first of all,
if somebody had done it,
okay. So the main thing in my mind is then, when is the next important arrival of somebody in Ireland who a documentary photographer could build their reputation by putting together, you know, I don't know how many photographs does it take to tell a story. That's a topic for another. Another one, but I'll say, you know, if it was as long as the Queen's visit, it might be the 20 photographs
Well, it would. I mean, you ask who's the next person coming. Well, there will never be a visit quite like Queen Elizabeth II's to Ireland. There'll never be a visit like that. And, of course, it was followed very shortly, I think it was afterwards, that President Obama came. So,
yeah, who documented his visit?
Well, probably the White House photographer did.
Yeah, somebody exactly. The White House photographer did. Yeah. Does Buckingham Palace have a photographer who travels with the Queen everywhere and documents her?
I don't know, but I want to find out now.
The other thing about it is, you see, the photographer from Buckingham Palace will take a photograph of the Queen posing with the various people and will keep a record of who the Queen met.
Hmm.
I do not believe that the White House photographer or the Buckingham Palace photographer will actually go capturing the emotional development of the Queen as she travelled to Ireland, will actually capture the, you know, those moments like you do in your wedding, you know, in your last wedding, you know, when you actually went photographing.
The White House photographer does have that access.
Yeah, they have that access. Do they have that documentary eye?
Or are they simply
using a journalist's eye? See, there's one thing to be a journalist and get the photograph of all the famous people together in the thing. But on the other hand, a real proper documentary photographer.
Yeah, you do see
There's a job for you. Go. Let me know who are the documentary team in the White House, right? And would they also be, if Mitt Romney wins the election, and that Irish guy as his running mate wins the election, because he'll come running over to Ireland, you can be absolutely sure if he wins the election.
Yeah, the current team will be out.
They'll be out.
Yes.
They'll be replaced by the new team.
Yes, the new president will
appoint. And will the new president have an ability to decide who will be the White House photographers?
Yeah.
Wow.
So Mitt Romney, if he's elected, may well be the next big state visit to Ireland.
So why don't you pitch yourself, Roger Overall, in preparation for whoever wins the American election, right? Never mind, you know, the politics of it, but you pitch to say, you know, when you come, what better than, in addition to the White House photographic team, right? Why not have a local documentary photographer? Because imagine the exhibition of photographs with the White House documentary photographer documenting the President's visit to Ireland. Parallel exhibition in the same space of the local documentary photographer's take on the same journey. Compare and contrast. I mean, that is the stuff of leaving certificate, you know, photographic students or, you know, the raw data out of which you could have a very interesting dialogue.
It's fascinating how it used to be the case that getting access to not just politicians but celebrities, people of note, was a lot easier. You were able to document people's lives and give a behind-the-scenes look. And in fact, it was often encouraged by those people. I mean, the Rolling Stones invited somebody to, I think, a chalet in France for a year while they were recording an album.
Did they?
I'm sure they did, yeah. And there's lots of kind of on-the-road kind of photography. Annie Leibovitz did a lot of it as well, I think. But these days, with the rise of PR and publicists and image rights and what have you, it's become increasingly difficult. A great thing to do would be, say, to photograph behind the scenes of a film, a movie, document the making of a movie. Well, very few people can get that kind of access. One person is Jeff Bridges, who's an actor himself, and who produces really interesting books about the films that he's been on. And he photographs with a particular kind of panoramic camera. And that's really exciting stuff, really interesting insight that you just can't get these days for some reason. I think if you really wanted and you pushed hard enough.
See, that's my point, and we're getting right to the end of this, but I actually think that people don't work hard enough to get the access that they want. And all this stuff about it's getting harder. That just means that the boundaries are changing, right? The photographers and all the rest of us who want to document ordinary life in this stage of history, we just have to get sharper, smarter, better at persuading people why, better at making alliances with people who share our values to make things happen. It's just not good enough to say it's getting harder.
That's put me in my place. I'm going to be quiet.
You
now.
Can have the last word. We got 4 seconds. Go.
Thank you, Paul.